through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
NFL.com with its Super Bowl ranking of the five matchups it wants to see. The Seattle Seahawks make the list. This is NFL headlines. With number four, this is who they want to see. The Tennessee Titans, the number four seed in the AFC, versus the Seattle Seahawks. I do not want to see this matchup. Not because I don't think Seattle could win. This is not the one I want. I feel very much like in Bring It On, where it's like, bring me your best. Like, no, I want, first of all, I want a championship win against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers at Lambeau, and then I want them to move on and beat the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. That's the route that I want Seattle to take. Jay.
I would love nothing more than to have that route as well. I mean, to be able to beat Green Bay on their field, I mean, one, there has been an unbelievable streak. Curtis, when was the last time that the Seahawks had beaten Green Bay at Lambeau?
1999. It was Holmgren's return to Green Bay. Brock was on the sideline charting plays.
Yeah, so it's been a long time. So it's been a long time since they have been able to beat the Packers in Lambeau. And to be able to do it against Aaron Rodgers would be that much sweeter. So I'm with you, Stacey. Those are the two matchups that I want. I would love for the Seahawks to be able to rise to those two occasions. And guess what? I do think that they can. I think that they're more than capable of doing that. And more I look at it, man, the Saints and the Packers are very, very blessed to be able to finish the season with the teams that they finished with. I mean, I feel really good about potentially playing those teams in the playoffs. I really do. I mean, I know that they're playing good football and they would be a tough matchup overall, but I think that this team, this Seahawks team, is more battle-tested and ready for that type of slugfest than those other two teams are.
Just 2 days after one Seahawks front office executive, John Schneider, was linked to another team's opening, another has been linked to a head coaching opening, a general manager opening. This one is VP of Player Personnel Trent Kirchner for the Seahawks has been linked to the Houston Texans in their search for their fifth ever general manager. Now, I don't know if he's a favorite, but yet another Seahawks front office exec who is being sought after by another team.
Yeah, don't be surprised to see Scott Fitterer and Trent Kirchner's name come up a lot. There are a lot of GM openings across the NFL. These two guys have gotten interviews before, and Fitterer was pretty close. He was down to, I think, the final three in terms of the Jets job. So those two guys are extremely talented. They've been in the Seahawks organization a long time. Personally have enjoyed my interactions with both of those guys. I think they're outstanding in what they do. I think they're very, very deserving of an opportunity in this league. And with the success that the Seahawks have had, I mean, why not look at those two guys and see what they can provide? And they've obviously been able to be around not only a group that was able to take a group that was able to take a franchise and rebuild it, rebrand it, but they've been able to continue to have sustained success. So I would absolutely be interviewing those two for every job.
And we are waiting on head coach Pete Carroll, who will join in just a few minutes. Before we get to that, NFL.com power rankings for the remaining playoff teams are out. Here we go. Number one, Kansas City Chiefs. Tell me who's shocked at that. Absolutely no one. Number two, though, you might be thinking the Green Bay Packers, but no, it is the Buffalo Bills, still in the AFC. That's actually the AFC championship game I'm predicting and would personally like to see. Number three, the NFC gets in there with the Green Bay Packers, New Orleans Saints at four. Then we get into some interesting territory. Where are the Seattle Seahawks? They're there at seven, because ahead of them are number five, the 11-5 Baltimore Ravens, who did, I believe, lead the league in point differential. So consider that. It wasn't an MVP season by Lamar Jackson again, but they overall played well. Then you've got number six, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, before the Seattle Seahawks. The Seahawks dropping from sixth to seventh after an underwhelming, not-so-electric offensive outing. Fair? Not fair. What do you guys think? Pittsburgh Steelers at 8, Cleveland Browns at 9, Titans at 10, Colts at 11.
I think it's fair. Sometimes in the playoff matchups, it's not, to me, when you look at it, yeah, it would be nice to have the night games and stuff, but they're all pretty much their own individual primetime games just because they're the only game during that time slot. And I don't know about you guys, but when it's playoff football, I love every minute of it. And I'm I am sitting down and I'm watching all three games, or at least I'm DVRing all three games that day and making sure that I catch the action. I just love it. And when sometimes I know you're a big red zone fan, right, Stacey?
Yes. Glued to it.
Yes. To me, I just get overwhelmed. I tried
what?
It once. I get overwhelmed by red zone. I get overwhelmed by all the games.
It's literally like the top of the muffin.
I know.
That's all it is.
But I don't like that. I want to know how they got there.
No.
That's the problem. I want to know how the drive went the entire way. I don't like just going when they cross the 50-yard line or they get into the red zone. That doesn't tell the whole story.
All right.
So
we gotta.
I love watching all of them.
We'll get back to this debate, but let's first throw you to Pete Carroll.
Okay. Coach, what can you tell us or what can you share about Jamal Adams' status for Saturday?
Well, he's gonna work through the week and see what he can get done and see if he's okay. We'll have to wait all the way up to game day to figure that out.
Were you more or less positive that he would be available following your conversations the last day?
Well, just judging from my general outlook, I'm positive. I'm more positive than not.
Thank you.
Sure.
Ben?
Hey, Pete, you've reiterated a number of times that you're not worried about the offense. So I was wondering, in what ways do you maybe see like similarities or shared characteristics between what the offense is now versus what it was at the beginning of the season, even though the offensive product looks different?
Well, generally, I'm not a worrier, so it doesn't really apply, but if you look at who we've been playing the last 3 weeks, these guys are really good, and they've made a difference. I don't think the defenses early in the year were playing to this level, and so it's a different, it's a different set of circumstances we're up against. And these guys, here we go with the Rams. The Rams are best in the NFL, so these guys are really, really tough in all phases. So I'm not sure about answering your question about it, but we're getting ready to go put together a game plan and execute the things that we can do. We're going to mix our game, do the things that we like doing, and see if we can find a way to get enough points to win a game. And whatever it is, it is. I don't care about the numbers before, the stats, or any of that stuff. It doesn't matter. This is all that stuff's gone. It doesn't matter at all right now. It's what happens now that counts. And so we couldn't be more fired up to go to this game and see if we can find our way to win.
And having Mike Iupati and Brandon Shell back, what does that do for the offense? And
stability,
the
stability, really. Both those guys have been solid performers for us. They have the most experience over the guys that have been playing. That should help the guys next to them. Both those guys are starters for a reason, and so we're happy to have them back. It looks great to see those guys in the huddle.
Thanks.
Corbin?
Hey, Pete, with Jamal's status up in the unit for this week, Ryan Neal was one of the bright spots for your defense, even when the unit was struggling in the first half of the season. How big of a deal is it now, looking back, that he got all those significant snaps early in the season, especially for a player that hasn't played any defensive snaps in playoff games?
Yeah, we have a lot of confidence in Ryan because of the way he played and what he does. He showed us. He showed us he plays really hard. He's tough. He's a playmaker. He's very aggressive in his style of play. And the position that he's playing and the makeup of that spot, when he comes off the bench to play for Jamal, you saw us last week. He came in. He was pressuring right off the bat because that's what we think of him. We think of him in the same mold. He'll be ready to go if we need him, and we'll be happy to play him. He had a really good, statement that he was able to make in the games he played, and we're happy to have him out there.
Masvita.
You talked about the good mixture on your team. Just how does that play out in terms of the veterans and the young guys going to the playoff game? How advantageous is that?
Well, I you're talking about experienced players and the young guys and all that. I think it really helps, because just in typical fashion, young guys look up and they watch and they listen to the guys that are the who-sayers. And it helps to have guys that have been there. And whether it would be helping settle nerves or concerns, or to watch how they aren't going to change their preparation and their process or their mentality. Our guys that have been around, they know that we have to stick to the stuff that we do to put out a championship performance, and they'll see that, and I'll point it out too as we're going, and all of that combined, it helps, you know, and it's good to have the young excitement about it. You know, this game calls for juice, and so everybody needs to get fired up, and as we always do, and the young guys will certainly be there for them. So I think both sides have something to offer.
Larry?
Hey, Pete. After the Buffalo game, when you gave up 44 points, the most one of your teams has ever done here, and the sky was falling, everyone was saying, you expressed confidence that things were going to turn around. What exactly gave you that confidence, and did you think the turnaround was going to be that dramatic with the defense?
Well, that's a big question, kind of. What gave me the confidence to hold on to that is years of coaching, you know, and watching guys do stuff, and knowing that what you see isn't always what you're going to get, you know, we had a lot of things to put together that had yet been, you know, had coalesced, and so it was going to take some time, and confidence in the coaches, confidence in the players, the playing ability of the guys, being able to see them, but not seeing them play well together yet. You know, it just took us some time, and more, maybe a little longer than normal. But I'd never seen us be that bad, and so I knew that wasn't the way it was going to be. And so that's why I was confident. That's why I believed, and these guys gave me every reason to believe by the way they were, you know, going about it. Kenny did a great job keeping these guys together, and we turned a great corner, and we still got a lot of improvement to make. So it's been an exciting challenge this year, and hopefully we can, you know, make some noise here.
John Boyle.
Yeah, Pete. This week is 10 years since your first playoff game here, and a pretty memorable one. The famous Marshawn Lynch run. What do you remember of that as that moment was unfolding, just being on the sideline, seeing that?
Yeah, that was a breathtaking moment. It really was. It was. It's why it's so memorable, and it's been a historic moment, and historic moment for, you know, our area and even the league too. I mean, nobody else could have made that run the way he made it, and the way he finished it than Marshawn. I think the exhilaration that came from that was also because we were up against, you know, odds, and everybody had been, you know, chirping at us all the way through the preparation for the playoffs and all of that, and world champs and all. I mean, everything was going. You know, it was just a moment in time that was kind of frozen, I'm glad we could capture it and see Hasselbeck try to lay a block downfield and all that kind of stuff. You know, it was pretty special.
And then for you, that was your first playoff game with this team. This week will be your 18th. I mean, could you have imagined 10 years ago you'd still be around coaching your 18th playoff game?
No, I didn't think you guys would keep me around here for 3 or 4 years at the time. That's way beyond what I thought could happen.
Bob?
Do you have any update on Jaren Reed? And then also I was wondering just how the pick of Damian Lewis and his ability to step right in this year, how critical was that for kind of the way the offensive line came together?
Okay, start with Jay Reed. He has an oblique strain is what he has, and I think it came out, it was written something else. But, you know, we're going to be real careful with him during the week and see how he goes day to day. He's much better than he was on the weekend, so there's cause for, you know, optimism there. D. Lou, you know, I go back to, you know, he's had a great season. I mean, he's had a great season. He's got to be an all rookie guy. He just has to be the way he played and contributed and competed and overcame the bumps and the bruises during the season. His mentality was great. His competitiveness was obvious. And he's talented and tough and all that stuff. I go back to when, you know, Eddie Orgeron had said that you're going to like this guy from the day he walks in, you know, and he's going to be able to play from the day he walks in. And you know, I didn't know. You know, he was junior college transfer and all that, and he had done extremely well there. But I don't know. I was ready for him to be really good, and because of what Eddie said, you know, and I believe him, trust in what he thought, and he has done nothing but continue to express that he fits and belongs and he's the real deal, and he could play center someday if we needed him to. He's a marvelous draft pick for us, part of this team.
Art?
you've only got one game worth of film to look at the Rams' backup quarterback, Wolford, but does he look like the next Colt McCoy?
Well, it's interesting you would say that. He's about the same size and all that. He had a really good game. And to bounce back from his first throw he makes, you know, gets picked off, and he bounced right back and had a really winning football game. And I'm sure they're just really excited about it. And they didn't protect him to, you know, and be safe with him at all. He threw the ball over the yard and made some big throws down the field and spread the formations and all that. It was really impressive. And he ran well, too. And so I can see that if that's the way they're going, that they would have a high level of excitement about, you know, his ability to throw together another good game. So he did really well.
Greg?
Pete, how different did that offense look with him rather than Goff? And how does that change your preparation?
Not much different. He was a little quicker to take off, maybe, you know, and use his legs to make some, you know, make a couple first downs. And did a nice job on third down. He had good third down numbers for the day, and he ran for a couple of them himself. So a little different, but the plays were basically the same in the style of play. They, you know, it's 16, 17 games now. They're going to do the same stuff that they got to do. But he was impressive.
Is it now a foregone conclusion for you guys that you're not going to have Josh Gordon, or what's the sensing on that situation?
We've had no. I have nothing to report. We've heard nothing from the league about him being available.
Thank you.
Matt?
You mean in the way they play or the way they talk to one another?
On the way they play.
Oh, okay. You know, they're so uniquely different. You know, uniquely different in style and all. The result is you throw it to them, they catch it, and they make plays, and they make big plays, and the consistency, I think, is really the thing that jumps out. Tyler's been doing it for years. Think of how long he's been good, you know, and just continues to be unique and special, and has as good a game as he's ever had in this last one, you know. And DK just continues to be impressive in a totally different fashion. They get along well. They learn from each other. They help each other. They have, you know, good relationship and all that. And I think that's always helped, you know, and with our young guys, that the older guys will take them under their wing. Kind of Tyler's been like that with DK the whole time.
Curtis Crabtree.
Yeah, Pete, we saw Brandon Shell came off the reserve list for you guys. How nice would it be to get him back from the ankle as well and get him in the lineup for you this week? And with then a quick aside on that. How much different does Alex Collins look to you compared to the guy you had as a rookie?
Okay. First off, you know, in exercising all the caution, you know, we looked after Brandon, and, you know, he had he never did catch the, you know, the virus and all that. He bounces right back, comes to us, and we're really happy about that. You know, he just coming back to make sure that his ankle is as good as it can be this week would have helped him, you know, to get one more. So he looks great. He should be full speed and ready, and would love having him back out there. And the other one was Alex Collins. Yeah, Alex was a really good player. He's an excellent player coming out of college. You know, you remember that he was the guy that had rushed for 1,000 yards 3 years in a row in the SEC. And Brady, you know which other – there's only one other back in history that did that, right, in the SEC? Brady, you know who that is? Oh, you got it, just under the buzzer. Yeah, Herschel Walker. My point is that this guy's carried the football a ton, you know, and he's so experienced and savvy and all. When he went in the game there, you know, I remember somebody saying, you know, hey, make sure he, you know, covers it up and takes care of the football. And I said, hey, you know, and I jumped at him. He'll get it done. He's an excellent football player, and he looks quicker than ever. And he looks quicker than ever, and for him to go in there and finish that drive off, it was perfect, and I was really fired up for him and for us, of course. But he's a good ball player, and, you know, love having him around.
Brady,
Pete, with Ken Norton Jr., you've called him. I think you said before that he's one of your favorite people that you've ever worked with in the NFL. Why is that?
Because of the – really, I go all the way back to the player that he was. And I had a chance to coach Kenny near the end of his career in San Francisco. And I got to know him, you know, as a leader of a world championship team. And you know, he had history, and even though he was a Bruin, you know, there was something. There's always been something special about Kenny, and his fire, his creativity, as in his brain and the way he thinks and operates and works and manages with people and all. His goal when I talked him into coming into coaching back at SC as a GA, you know, I had done an interview at the network, and he was doing interviews down there, and I asked him to come on out in the parking lot with me when I was leaving, and I said, "Have you ever thought about coaching?" You know, and so we started talking about it right then, and I remember saying to him, "Kenny, this league, this NFL league, they need you. They need you in positions of leadership around here. And if you come, it's going to work out. You're going to do great." Because of who he is and his makeup and his competitiveness and his toughness and his way. You know, he was such a figure in San Francisco with all those stars. They all ducked and dodged when he came around. He had command of the whole place, and he would call anybody out from, you know, the offense, the defense, and he was loud and boisterous and out there and just the epitome of a leader. So all that's all the background of it. When in college, I wanted him to get around our young kids because he had so much to share with them and so much vision in the background with his pops and all the stuff they went through and growing up and all that. He just has such unbelievable perspective. Man, he's carried it over here. One other thing. The one thing Kenny said a while back, once he had been coaching and he was interviewed or something like that, he said, "Really, all I want to do is coach and show guys what I was able to experience when I was playing." He didn't care about, you know, being a head coach or being a coordinator or any of that kind of, he just wanted to share his experience with others so they could enjoy it and you know, have the benefit of what he'd been through. And I always loved that about him. You know, it was such humility after all he had done and all. So thanks for giving me a chance to talk to him. I like it.
Sure. Thanks for the trivia question.
Sure.
You got Tim it. Booth.
Pete, you talked about a month ago when Jamal was going to face the Jets about just pulling them aside and having a conversation about facing a forward team. Do you have similar conversations with guys when they're going into their first postseason game, like in Jamal's case this year, or even a guy like Carlos who hasn't been in the playoffs in 5 years and is going through it for the first time with you guys?
Yeah, Tim, I would like to think that I'm on the lookout constantly for who might need a little something, or I might be curious about where they are, where they're coming from, or how they're seeing it and experiencing it. So I'm working it, you know. And so I can't say that I get to every guy to talk about that specific topic, but I do address the topic with all of them. And then, you know, I'm looking and listening and, you know, coaching, you know, trying to, if I can help somebody perspective wise so that they can be at their best, then that's, you know, I'm on that the whole time. So, and it doesn't mean it's always just the young guys, like you're saying. It can be the guys that have never had it before, and now they've been dreaming about it, and now it's this monstrous, you know, opportunity and ordeal, and they don't play like they're capable because they make it something into something that isn't. It's just football, and they need to be reminded of that. So doesn't mean it isn't the best experience of your life and the most fun you ever had and all that kind of stuff, but they got to remember and keep perspective in proper place, and my job.
That was head coach Pete Carroll with a few injury updates, a bit of positive news on Jaren Reed there, and an ominous report on Jamal Adams. We'll revisit that next, plus talk about what the Seahawks need to do to get the win wildcard weekend. That's next on Jake and Stacey.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Three big defensive injury updates for the Seattle Seahawks. I'll go ahead and start with the first one you're all wondering about, Jamal Adams. He hurt the shoulder opposite the one he'd hurt earlier this year. Here's Pete Carroll on his status.
Well, he's gonna work through the week and see what he can get done and see if he's okay. We'll have to wait all the way up to game day to figure that out.
Adams, the team's sack leader with 9.5, had to leave the game. I saw a report that he briefly went back in for a snap, but ultimately his helmet was taken from him. That's what Pete Carroll told the Seahawks. So not sure if they did that after he went back in or if they sent him back out because he thought he felt fine and then decided to play it safe. Either way, they held him out of the remainder of the game, and he is going to be a game-time decision. I would guess we don't find out until those inactives come out on game day, Jake. I'm feeling okay about this game without him. My heart mostly just breaks for him not being able to play in his very first ever playoff game.
Well, hold on. hold on. You're acting like he's not going to play.
There's still some optimism. I'm saying this is the most ominous of the injury updates in that it is a non-answer from a person who's entirely too optimistic in a good way. But
correct.
Pete Carroll is incredibly optimistic. A non-answer to me is ominous.
Yeah, I do agree with that. I don't like the fact that it's a non-answer, and you can't tell if it's gamemanship one way or the other in terms of Jamal Adams, but I would have to imagine that, you know, with this decision for Jamal Adams, you know he's going to be doing everything that he can to get himself out there. I mean, I would have a really hard time believing that Jamal Adams is not going to play in this game if it's close. It just unless this is a significant injury that this seriously needs some time, and that would make me worried. Not having Jamal Adams out there for this type of game, I mean, it would be everything. So I am hopeful. I'm going to be like Pete Carroll, and I'm going to be hopeful, and I'm going to be optimistic that Jamal Adams will play in this game. But I agree. I didn't like the non-answer there.
Jamal Adams might be the most competitive person I've covered on this team, which is saying something. So maybe he's going to just will himself onto that field. The Seahawks, though, are probably going to want to play it careful, not just for this game, but for his future in Seattle. Undoubtedly looking at that contract extension. Let's get to the next injury, this one on Jaron Reed. He left the game with an oblique strain. Here's Pete.
He has an oblique strain is what he has, and I think it came out, it was written something else. But, you know, we're going to be real, you know, real careful with him during the week and see how he goes day to day. He's much better than he was on the weekend, so there's cause for, you know, optimism there.
I think that's a much more optimistic update from Pete, not just because he literally says there's more cause for optimism, but because it sounds like whatever swelling or soreness was there has already somewhat gone down in a short week, Jake.
Yeah, that one to me is extremely encouraging. And obviously we know the impact that Jamal Adams has for this defense in both the run and the pass game. But Jaron Reed has been very, very good in the second half of this season. And he has been a force at the line of scrimmage, blowing up plays in the run and the pass game, being a major factor in the interior of that defensive line. And so hearing that the swelling has gone down, at least for today, is really positive news, Stacey. And Pete said that they're going to be extremely careful with him during the week. And Jaron Reed is one of those players that you feel more confident about if he's not able to practice through the week, that he'll still be able to give his best effort on game day. Some guys, they need practice. They need practice in order to play at a high level. And Jaron Reed, I believe, is one of those guys that you just got to get him healthy. You got to get him healthy for the game. He's a vet. He's been in the system a long time. And I believe that he'll just getting him out there and having him being able to be full go would be huge.
Now, this one had the media all a flutter because it was a bit of a walk-off comment from Pete Carroll. Here's what he had to say on Daryl Taylor.
Joe, you didn't ask your question, man. Come on.
You want me to ask about Daryl Taylor?
Yes. Yes. He's practicing today. Okay, see you later. All right.
I don't think he's kidding. I think
no, he's not practicing. Kidding. That's a Marshawn Lynch.
Yes, it is. I think he was waiting for Joe to ask about it. And finally, I've seen him do this before. When he's excited to tell you about something that he wants you to know, he'll remind you to ask. It's what he did to Danny with Marshawn Lynch.
Absolutely. And this has been a question that he has had to answer every single week for at least the past month.
Fairly.
Right? Yeah, well, fairly, of course. But I'm saying that he has had to answer this question nonstop. And so finally, when he has some good news, no one's going to ask the question anymore. Everybody's just moved on. So,
he
of course. It was his walk-off question.
Walk-off
question. Now, to me, I'm curious about what this means. Is this, okay, he's going to practice and he's still a couple weeks away? Or is he's going to practice this week and we feel good enough because he's been close enough to it that he could potentially play at the end of this week if everything goes well? That is where I am going to be curious to see how this ends up coming about for Daryl Taylor. Because, again, remember, about a month ago, I told everyone that the feeling about Daryl Taylor amongst the coaching staff, amongst the players, is extremely high. I mean, all very impressed and excited to see Daryl Taylor out on the field. So that means he's been close enough to be able to get himself practicing and ready to go for a game. But there has been some discrepancy in terms of his injury and and the healing process and all of that that puts all of that into question. I'm just curious, how close is he? And unfortunately, you didn't get to have a follow-up question to that.
I don't think Pete Carroll volunteers this information, which is exactly what he did, unless Daryl Taylor has a chance to play in the postseason. By now, you're heading into the postseason. Daryl Taylor has been this kind of ask about it, let down thing that for the most part, we, as members of the media, have written off that he'll even play this year. The number one story heading into the week is your upcoming opponent, your upcoming wildcard game. Is Jamal Adams healthy? Is Jaron Reed healthy? No one's asking about Daryl Taylor for a reason, because people are assuming he's not going to play this year and because there are other injuries people are asking about. You can get away with not giving another single update on Daryl Taylor until your final season press conference. Volunteering that information in this one, there's a purpose to that. I don't know what the purpose is. There's a purpose to it.
Well, and my hope is that the purpose is that you're going to see Daryl Taylor out on the field, that he's healthy, he's ready to roll. And the reason why is not because I think Daryl Taylor is all of a sudden going to be a sack machine and he's just going to be this unreal contributor for this team. But what I do believe is that it adds depth. And when you have a guy like Daryl Taylor, and the reason why they drafted him was to be a guy that is an explosive player off of the edge in some of these pass rushing situations, I think it just adds more versatility to this defense at the right time. And if you can find a legitimate role for Daryl Taylor, I would be thrilled. I'd be absolutely thrilled about that.
All right. As a reminder, you guys, don't miss the Seahawks playoff roundtable today from 3 to 4 p.m. on Wyman and Bob. Every weekday during the playoffs, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton are joined by a cast of our NFL experts with an inside look at the Hawks. The Seahawks playoff roundtable daily 3 to 4 p.m. on the home of the Seahawks playoff run, 710 ESPN Seattle. We sum it up next.
The wait is over.
Heck of a wave, man.
It's time to sum it up with Jake and Stacy. The final word on everything that matters today in sports.
Step back.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross here, summing up the day. Some important injury updates. It's a maybe on both Jaron Reed and Jamal Adams. I would guess both go to game time. Certainly Jamal Adams goes to game time. Pete Carroll sounding a little more optimistic about Jaron Reed. Meanwhile, Daryl Taylor, the rookie we haven't seen all season long, will practice today. Pete Carroll volunteering that information, clearly excited about it. Going back to another conversation we had about the Seahawks playoff game against the Rams this weekend, Jake, we both decided one of the most important things, in addition to our key of the game of stopping Aaron Donald and, as a result, finding a way to stop Leonard Floyd also, is going to be to not start slowly. And really, both of us did clarify, and you pointed this out, the formula they used to beat Washington, to beat the Rams, and to beat the San Francisco 49ers is probably the approach that they're going to take in this one. You're probably not going to see a high-scoring game. You're going to see a slow-moving game. Fine. That's fine. Get out with a win. I will accept that. I don't care if you put up 7 points, get out with a win. I can't take a slow start in the playoffs. In fact, if there's one thing I'm confident about with the team that is sometimes just impossible to predict, it's that more slow starts will get you knocked out of the playoffs again.
Yeah, and I would fully agree with that. When you put yourself in a hole, it is harder to climb out of, especially when you get to start playing tougher and tougher teams. And I think that there's a couple key things here as we look at this particular game as the Rams and the way that they are going to strategize how to play this game. Is one, I think that as you look forward to this game, it's not that Pete Carroll wants to start slow. I mean, don't get it twisted. It's not Pete Carroll wanting to start slow. It's the fact that he's not going to panic if they do. This team doesn't panic. And unlike Sean McVay and the Rams, last time that they played, Sean McVay was furious and freaking out that it was 6-6. Pete Carroll, great ball. Hey, we're right where we want to be heading into the second half. Why? Because he has Russell Wilson. Because he has the utmost confidence in this offense and Russ and this defense to be able to separate and come through when it's needed the most, second half, fourth quarter. So with that being said, I do believe that Pete Carroll was asked about his feelings on the offense, and the way that he said it is, guess what? I don't worry. it's playoff time, all that other stuff, all those rankings, all those stats that you had in the regular season, crumple them up, throw them away. Let's go. It's time to go right now. And this is where it matters, and this is where it counts. And I think that when you look at this team's ability to play a complete game, which is what they're going to have to do in order to get themselves to at least the NFC Championship game, this is an opportunity for you to, with your starting five offensive linemen fully healthy for the first time since the Minnesota Vikings game, I feel more confident than ever that this offense can play a much better brand of football right from the beginning. And if you're able to score 7 to 10 points, right, you score a touchdown and you get 10 points in the first half, I think that's a great start for this group. With the opportunity that they have to go up against a backup quarterback that the Rams will be bringing out there on offense.
A backup quarterback, and I don't worry about the Seahawks' defense in this game. And one conversation we didn't get to because we were talking about the impact of fans at stadiums, whether or not that's impacted doubt about this team. A conversation we were going to get to is just our confidence level about the defense in the playoffs. I'm okay. My confidence level about the defense in this one is fine. They may not have Cooper Kupp back. He has to be asymptomatic by game day in order to be activated from the COVID list. They have been a Jekyll and Hyde offense all year, even with a healthy Jared Goff. I am okay on this defense against the Rams. I start to worry, and I know Pete Carroll makes fun of worriers, but sorry. I start to worry about this team against the Saints, which is where I would predict the road to that NFC championship would go. You go to New Orleans, and then you have to go to Lambeau and play Green Bay if you make it all the way and if those two teams also continue to advance. Beat the number two seed, then you got to go play the number one seed. That would be my prediction. Those two teams are the third highest scoring team in the NFL and the top scoring team in the NFL. That's not going to be easy. Like, your defense is not going to be able to hold those teams to under 17 points the way they have. And I'm not saying it's not possible, and I'm not saying that defensive turn your team has made isn't legit. It is legit, and I think it cheapens their accomplishment to say it's only because of poor quarterbacks. I think they've made some very, very important steps forward that should be applauded. But this isn't Colt McCoy. This isn't, on the same hand, like, these are offenses that are firing on all cylinders. Green Bay's Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams has been deadly. They've been lethal this year. You got to be ready for that. And if your defense has some lapses, if another team gets ahead, you need a touchdown in the first quarter. You need a touchdown in the second quarter. You need to make sure that you're efficient on offense. So I need to see it at some point. I don't want to throw those regular season stats out the window just yet. I'm not confident that they won't just fly back in there and rear their head again.
Well, they could. They could. But I don't believe so. I don't believe that this defense is all of a sudden going to go from great to all of a sudden being back to being one of the worst and getting boat raced. I really, when you look at, I just encourage people to go and look at the Green Bay Packers and the New Orleans Saints. Look at their last 4 to 5 games that they have played. Look at their opponents. Fair. Look at the way that they have played at the end of the season. They have greatly benefited from being able to play some weaker opponents. And I believe that the Seahawks are a team that people don't want to face, that are playing good complementary football, that are playing great special teams, playing really good defenses, or really good defense, and that this offense is capable of doing anything and winning in any style. And so, unfortunately, Stacey, I don't believe that this game against the Rams is going to be able to get you excited and going, and the fan base being able to all of a sudden say, hey, I believe in this offense in a way that they were believing in it in the beginning of the season. But I think overall that this offense has the capability of doing whatever it needs to win games. And this New Orleans Saints team, Drew Brees has not been perfect in this season. He has been up and down. And if you can affect Drew Brees, if you're fortunate enough to play him in the divisional round, I think that there is enough room there where you're going to have a battle on your hands, and it's not just going to be the Saints going up and down the field on you, scoring 30 points. So I love this conversation because it's not going away because of the style.
And it's not going to go away next
that,
week.
That Saturday is going to be 100%. You're playing the number one defense in the league, and they're number one for a reason. And we've witnessed that the two times that we have played the Rams. The Seahawks have played the Rams. But the great thing is that I think they have every opportunity to take care of business and to win this game, and you know, to be comfortable in whatever happens in this game, good or bad. You know that this group has the capability of turning it on and being able to, you know, really pull it out when they need it the most. And that's what's happened the last two games, in the second half against the Rams 2 weeks ago and in the fourth quarter against the 49ers.
It is what's happened, but you can't wait until the fourth quarter when you get further into the playoffs. I'll allow it against the Rams, not because I don't think the Rams are a fair team to face, not because I don't think that they can score on you, but because that defense is the number one defense in the league. It's still going to be tough. I know what you've said about Drew and Jake. I can see you just getting like, no, just hear me out on this. But I need points, man. I need points. I'm like Veruca Salt all over again. I've regressed. That's what I've done. I thought I got to a place. And then I regressed back into it.
We were doing
no,
so good.
No,
just
I'm back
go
to being spoiled.
Go look at the last four or five games.
Fine,
do it.
Fine. All right. Jake, are you on the playoff roundtable today?
No, I am not.
Okay.
I believe it's Michael Bumpus today, actually.
Michael Bumpus. All right. Playoff roundtable is going to be during Wyman and Bob. That's from 3 to 4 p.m. Wyman and Bob starting next. Do not go anywhere. This has been Jake and Stacey on 710 ESPN Seattle.